everyone. Welcome to Unchained, your no-hype resource for all things crypto. I'm your host, Laura Shin, author of The Cryptopians. I started covering crypto 7 years ago, and as a senior editor at Forbes, was the first mainstream media reporter to cover cryptocurrency full-time. This is the September 9th, 2022 episode of Unchained. Unchained Daily Bits are now on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/c/unchainedpodcast to subscribe and catch up on the top headlines in crypto in 60 seconds or less. Hey, Unchained listeners. As you know, it's hard keeping up with the fast-paced world of crypto, so we've got just the thing for you. Subscribe to our free Unchained Daily newsletter at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. You'll get the latest crypto news in original articles from our reporters, as well as summaries of other happenings in bullet points, plus our meme of the day, all curated and written by our amazing team. It's still your no-hype resource for all things crypto, just in newsletter form. Sign up at unchainedcrypto.substack.com. Again, the URL is unchainedcrypto.substack.com. 1inch is a top DEX aggregator that finds the best rates across multiple networks. Why use a single DEX when you can use them all? Get 1inch on your phone now or swap on 1inch.io. Don't miss Mainnet, the most anticipated crypto event of the year, September 21st to 23rd in New York City. Get $300 off your pass today by visiting mainnet.events and entering promo code UNCHAINED at checkout. See you this fall at Mainnet 2022. With the Crypto.com app, you can buy, earn, and spend crypto in one place. Download and get $25 with the code LAURA, link in the description. Today's guest is Preston Van Loon, co-founder and Ethereum Core developer at Prismatic Labs. Welcome, Preston.
Hey, happy to be here.
At the time of recording, Ethereum's long-awaited merge is projected to occur sometime between Wednesday evening, Eastern time, and Thursday morning. This shift to proof of stake is certainly one of the most momentum transitions in Ethereum's history, at least from a technical perspective. And you, Preston, have been working on what is currently the most popular client for the merge. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling great. Really excited. You know, we've been working on this for many years, and the impacts and benefits of the merge are just, it's just amazing to see it's finally here. I think everyone's been waiting. Merge is coming soon since, I don't know, 2016. And finally, we're 1 week away. It's just incredible to see it.
So let's make sure that all the listeners are up to speed on what the merge is. Can you explain what's happening on a technical level?
Yeah, so the merge, in short, is a switch from proof of work to proof of stake. How Ethereum comes to consensus on blocks in the blockchain. The reason it's called a merge is that we already launched the proof of stake side in another blockchain called the Beacon Chain. This is running, you know, alongside the proof of work chain and has been for, I think, about a year and a half since December of 2021 or 2020, a year and a half ago. And the reason we did it that way is we really wanted to test it and make sure it works. That proof of stake as a concept and the model that's been designed is really going to work. And now that we've been running it for a considerable amount of time and sort of got it up to a scale that has a large economic security with billions at stake, say, okay, now it's time to do the switch. So effectively, we will take the Beacon Chain and merge it with the proof of work chain or the main chain of Ethereum and effectively remove the proof of work part there and use the proof of stake to come to consensus on the blockchain.
So if Ethereum pulls this off, what impact do you see it having on Ethereum as well as the larger crypto space?
There are a lot of really important benefits to come to the switch of proof of stake. So the one that is probably the most evident is the efficiency gain, right? Proof of work is very expensive in terms of computation, in terms of resources, hardware, and energy. And now with the switch to, you know, proof of stake, there's not as much computational requirements. So I like to think about it as if you wanted to be a block producer today, you know, before the merge, you almost need an entire data center or larger of hardware, a fleet of hardware to hash enough information to come up with the right answer for a block, right? You're doing a lot of work, the proof of work part. Well, now, you know, in proof of stake, it's as simple as, or it can be done on something as simple as a consumer grade hardware, like a laptop. So a lot of us have been running on a Raspberry Pi, which is like an $80 piece of hardware that, you know, middle schoolers use to tinker with and learn about computers, right? It's really cheap hardware and costs nothing to run essentially costs very little. So that, like, that in itself is a really amazing trade-off that or benefit that comes with this. And, you know, the energy, it's hard to quantify, but there is some like reduction in carbon emissions, which is really great. That's not really why we're doing it, but the energy efficiency has a lot of benefits to it. I think the other pieces that we like to highlight are that it makes it more decentralized, right? Like in the example I just gave, you would need an entire data center to be a block producer, or people usually do is they join a pool and pool the resources with others. Well, now you as an individual with a minimal investment can be a block producer, can be a participant. We just really lower that barrier to entry for at-home stakers, for more individuals, and, you know, make that pool of participants more decentralized, because the decentralized future is not, you know, three or four large organizations producing blocks. It's a much larger group of people. Then the other part of this is that it makes Ethereum a bit more predictable when it comes to block times. With proof of work, Ethereum has like a 13-second block time, and this is a probabilistic average. Like, it's not guaranteed that a block's going to come every 13 seconds. Well, with proof of stake, we have more of a time-based issuance of blocks. Every 12 seconds, a block is due to be issued or produced by a validator. So not only is that a slightly shorter time where you get approximately 10% more block space per day, but it's also consistent, right? It's almost a guarantee. As long as a participation is high, near 100%, then you're always going to get a block every 12 seconds, which really helps with estimations. Like if you are making a deposit and they say, oh, you need, you know, 30 block confirmations, well, you know exactly how much time that's going to take.
And so earlier when you said that the environmental benefit isn't exactly why you're shifting to proof of stake, is it for these other technical reasons that you outlined, or what is the main driver?
Yeah, I think that when these cryptocurrencies were first developed and using proof of work, I don't think that we had, or those, you know, that it was quite a picture the future, how big it would get and in terms of how much energy would be put in there. So when, you know, Ethereum was launched, it always kind of had this goal to switch to proof of stake. And I think that at the time they weren't thinking about carbon emissions, just that this makes a bit more sense in terms of energy efficiency. And even with like renewable energies, you know, you could argue that energy is better spent somewhere else. But really, like, we talk about like, what does Ethereum care about as a platform? Well, it aims to be scalable and decentralized. And I think those aspects of switching to proof of stake are really the main motivators here. Besides, energy efficiency is great, and that makes a lot of sense. But to lower the barrier to entry, increasing decentralization and increasing the economic security of the chain makes it more secure in that way. It's much harder to attack when you need a lot more capital to do so.
Obviously, there have been a number of successful test merges. So at this point, it looks highly likely that this will also be a successful merge. But just because we're not 100% sure, I did want to ask, what is the contingency plan if, for whatever reason, the merge does fail next week?
Part of the process here is like building confidence. You know, what's taken us so long is that this merge admittedly is very complex. It has a lot of complexity, right? And with complexity, there's more surface area for bugs, more risk, more things that could possibly go wrong. But we have also kind of added in some insurance there. So things that could possibly go wrong, or most likely would go wrong, is that there's some kind of issue with the implementation of the software of the merge. What Ethereum has done and the Ethereum community has done is that we've come out with 5 different implementations of the proof of stake side of things. So that being an insurance policy is that, okay, well, if one of those clients, let's say Prism doesn't work, that's the one that I work on. If it just doesn't work for some reason, that we'll switch, you know, you have an option, you can switch to another one. And the great part about this is that we can push an idea called client diversity, which means, okay, we have 5 clients and we're going to encourage people to use them such that the distribution is not very high. So you have a larger diversity. You know, Prism being the most popular client is just over a third of the networks. So I think like 35%, something like that. So if it did completely halt, well, the chain could continue and people could, you know, quickly scramble to get to a new software, carefully, of course, but you have that insurance policy there. Now, I think that, you know, this is pretty risky, right? And we have tested a lot, and I really think it's going to go well. However, in, you know, the unlikely case of like, it just doesn't work at all. None of the clients work, like the stars align and the Swiss cheese aligns and like, it just doesn't work. Well, you know, it's kind of hard to plan for that, but I mean, you could, the proof of work side is still there. Like this is a hard fork, right? So it's not like we can stop anybody who continues to not to mine that and not upgrade, right? So I guess like the, you know, in the absolute worst case, we just say, okay, well, it didn't work. Let's keep going on the proof of work chain and sort of figure out what to do next. But again, it's so unlikely that all of the clients don't work in the same way, even after all this testing, and even with the testing of entropy of doing like shadow forks. Like we have forked mainnet and done the merge many times, and including all of the like chaos that comes with Ethereum. You know, we've simulated that and even copied that into these tests. So confidence is extremely high. There's not a bit in me that believes that it would get to that point, but you always say like, okay, well, what if you don't ask the question, then you're not going to be prepared. You have to have a plan to get out of your house if it's on fire, even though you know it's never going to burn down. You just got to know how to do it. So we do think about that, and we've kind of thought about all these different avenues. But you know, since it is such a dynamic problem that you can't really formulate a concrete plan. You kind of just sort of say, okay, here's where we're at, and we'll figure it out. And that's what Ethereum community is pretty good at. They've had plenty of times where things are not going well, and they figured it out.
Yeah, just what you were describing reminded me of the DOS attacks from the fall of 2016, which I wrote about in my book. There were different attacks, and sometimes one of the attacks would target like the Geth client, and then other times it would be the Parity client or whatever. And so, yeah, they kept having to tell people, you know, switch to this other client. Yeah. Very effective. It worked to, you know, help Ethereum survive that period. Okay, so in a moment, we're going to talk more about Prism and Prismatic Labs, but first, a quick word from the sponsors who make this show possible. The most anticipated crypto event of the year is back. Join us at Mainnet 2022, happening this September 21st to 23rd in New York City. Connect with 4,000-plus crypto builders and thought leaders for 3 days of can't-be-missed keynotes, fireside chats, demos, networking, and more. Get $300 off your pass today by visiting mainnet.events and entering promo code UNCHAINED at checkout. That's mainnet.events and promo code UNCHAINED. See you this fall at Mainnet 2022.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Join over 10 million people using crypto.com, the easiest place to buy, earn, and spend over 150 cryptocurrencies. Spend your crypto anywhere using the Crypto.com Visa card. Get up to 8% cash back instantly, plus 100% rebates for your Netflix, Spotify, and Amazon Prime subscriptions. Download the Crypto.com app now and get $25 with the code Laura. Link in the description. Back to my conversation with Preston. So as we discussed, you founded Prismatic Labs, and obviously you've been making Prism. Just talk a little bit more about what these clients do and what you've been working on, and also what the future of Prismatic Labs will be.
Yeah, you know, we've been working on this since the beginning of 2018. I first discovered Ethereum in 2017 and said, oh, this is a pretty cool idea, but doesn't scale very well. Like token listings or people, everyone was creating a token back then with their ICOs, and that was like maxing out the chain. Gas prices were getting out of control. The crypto kitties was crazy. So I started asking questions, you know, and kind of saying, how can I help make this technology that I believe was really cool and impactful? How can I make it faster? So we formed, Raul Jordan and I formed it in 2018. We kind of started working on just like a moonlighting project, saying like, I want to add sharding being the big scaling effort to increase throughput. I want to add that to the Go Ethereum client, which is something we were familiar with and interested in. And that evolved into, okay, well, let's put a team together. We met up in real life. So, okay, let's put a team together. We had got, I think there were four of us or maybe five of us. There were six of us originally. We never met before and never contributed to Ethereum in any way. We all just were interested, want to make an impact. So we make Prismatic Labs, start working on a Go Ethereum sharding, working closely with researchers. So like Vitalik and Justin Drake and those guys at the EF that were really responsible for formulating these ideas. And we would help, you know, flesh them out and discuss it if they're practically implemented, and then try to do that. So we started building, you know, Prism, and it's written in Go. So it's very similar to Go Ethereum, which kind of made sense when we wanted to merge it with that. But as the ideas evolved, to say, okay, we're going to have two blockchains here, the Beacon Chain and Ethereum Mainnet. It became like a standalone client. And the ideas were, you know, we'll do proof of stake in its own like world and then have that like reach consensus and then also validate and secure the proof of work side. The big problem we were having was that we couldn't figure out how to do proof of stake without paying gas within Ethereum mainnet. And we were worried that, you know, if gas prices were going high, which they were doing all over the place, that that could mean a liveness failure and that validators were not able to pay for the gas to validate transactions, to validate the blockchain. So I had to think of another model, and that's where we came up with this Beacon Chain idea. So far, the Beacon Chain has been doing extremely well. It's not had any major issues. It's been live, perfect liveness the entire time with this concept of finality, which is really, really nice. So I guess like what's the future, right? Prism, Prismatic Labs, we still have a lot of work to do, we think, with the Ethereum Core Protocol. Ethereum has this like, great vision to be, or possibility to be, a global settlement layer, to really be something we can all use. But I think to reach this scale, there's a lot of work to do. Primarily being, we still haven't done the sharding part that we kind of set out to do 4 years ago. It's mostly been on proof of staking, getting things ready for that. Well, in the next, I'd say like 2 to 3 years, so that's really what we're working on. There's ideas like Dank sharding, proto-Dank sharding, EIP-4844, which is to do data availability sharding for rollups, and rollups being like layer twos that can really bring this, you know, like scaling transaction throughput to Ethereum, where Ethereum's doing 10 transactions per second, while rollups can basically 100x that. You know, guarantees that Ethereum gives you some data availability, so we give more data space, there could be more space for rollups and stuff like that. So that's kind of our immediate future in the next couple of years.
For Prismatic Labs to focus more on scaling and sharding?
Yeah, and that's really like Prismatic Labs. And of course, there are a lot of other teams in the community, like one of five that does the proof of stake side. But I think that's like the roadmap is coming up, at least for us at Prismatic Labs, is working on the scaling part again and sharding in particular.
And how big is your team now? Because I know, for instance, after the initial Ethereum launch, then the teams working on the clients, like, you know, Geth and Parity, they, you know, had to keep making upgrades and all that. So are you expanding in order to kind of take on this new task? Or?
Yeah, we have thankfully been funded from, you know, the Ethereum Foundation, others in the community, Gitcoin grants, right? People are, we're open source public goods project, and we've been thankful to receive enough funding that we're now 11 people. And being 11 people, it's enough that we can maintain the client in its day and also be working on the new features. I think that we could always use more people, right? And we encourage the open source contributors to come take a look, to break things, ask questions, to even just read the code. And if it's not making sense, there's probably opportunity to clean that up. But with that said, you know, we're a pretty good team size and we've been working well at this size. I feel like once you get over 10 people, you start to have some scaling problems internally as hierarchy, and you need managers and all this kind of stuff. So we're at the sweet spot of the size, and we're feeling like, okay, we're not totally drowning at work. We're still getting things done, shipping things on time. And yeah, so.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to say earlier too, was I just love how, you know, with you and your co-founders, you guys had not really contributed to Ethereum before. And now obviously hugely important to this momentous shift happening in Ethereum, which is just something in general that I love about the crypto space, because, you know, I think a lot of people get into crypto and yeah, they have nothing, and it's very open space. And so people can really make something of themselves. One thing I wanted to ask you about was, I'm sure you're aware that there are these miners that are threatening to fork the proof of work chain. You mentioned that, you know, obviously it's still not clear whether this is definitely going to happen, but I just, you know, was curious for your take on that movement.
I have been seeing that as well. Ideas about like continuing the proof of work chain, like purposely removing difficulty bomb, changing the way gas fees are burned, or gas is burned, like EIP 1559. I don't really understand. I guess I do understand like some of the motives, but in general, like I just don't really see a future for it. Again, I'm a core developer where I really understand like the code, the logic, and the things that go with it. I'm not a trader, investor, or anything of that sort. So I can appreciate that some people might find some value in a chain like that, but I really don't, you know, see a long term being a thing. But you know, people said that about ETH Classic, so I don't know, you know, what's going to happen. But you know, I was looking at the code. They have like a fork of Go Ethereum. It doesn't look ready. I mean, there's still a week to go, and it seems like they're kind of planning to do their fork after the merge, like maybe a week after the merge, which also seems kind of strange. You'd think that like it'd be an instantaneous, like when the merge happens, there's one chain and there's another, and the other one's the other one. But they're almost like branching off of what the merge is branching off of, and making a sort of like a third fork and calling it something else. So I would just say like, okay, well, if the merge wasn't happening and somebody did that, would you want to be a part of it? And what's happening to DeFi on there? It's going to be chaos. So I personally won't use it or endorse it, but I can appreciate that this is a diverse space and people can do whatever they want. And that's really like blockchain and this kind of tech is great, because, you know, who can stop you? No one can stop you. So that's great.
All right. Last question for the users out there who are waiting for lower gas fees and more block space. What would you say to them?
I would say that it's coming soon. yeah, we've been saying coming soon for so long. But at the merge, you get like a very small improvement, 10% more block space. It's not really, you're not really going to feel it a whole lot. You're not going to feel much with the merge. It is top of mind. After the merge, we're thinking about withdrawals. You know, validators have been at stake indefinitely since the beginning. So maybe it's time for withdrawals to be enabled, transfers. And then it's, and in around the same time, it's also like getting back to the scaling part. So making throughput faster and all these kind of things. But if you're looking for, I don't know, if you're looking for some relief right now, well, there are solutions through layer two. So there's a lot of great layer two options out there. There's a lot of great DeFi activity or NFT activity, or really what you want to do on the main chain. You probably can find the same projects have deployed to multiple of the layer two roll-up chains. So they're and some of them have extremely low fees with the same security that Ethereum has. So definitely check that out.
Yesterday, news broke that Coinbase was funding a lawsuit against the Treasury Department over the Tornado Cash sanctions. And it turns out that you are one of the plaintiffs. Can you explain what motivated you to do that and what you think the significance will be?
You know, I can only talk a little bit about it because it is an active case. But the basis of it is that the code that powers Tornado Cash is speech. It's been established the code is speech. And we think that the sanctions that OFAC has put on here is effectively putting a censor on free speech. I think that's wrong. So I've, you know, joined in this lawsuit with a few others and with the help of Coinbase. And our goal here is to try to get that overturned. We're not really seeking any like money or anything. I do have some Ether that's trapped in there. You know, I can't take it out or be faced for sanctions violations, but really the goal is to get that reversed and say, you know, code is speech and free speech is a constitutional right.
And so ideally, then it would only be addresses that would be sanctioned rather than the contracts themselves. Is that sort of the outcome that you're hoping for?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I can't really comment on too many details. I've been told I can't say too much, but you know, that's we do think that the free speech part of it is important and really want to get that part of it overturned.
All right. So before we go, assuming that the merge is successful, how will you celebrate?
I think, yeah, if it goes really well, I'm going to have a really great night's sleep. I think that's going to be one of the first things. It's been a long journey to get here, and I really want it to go well. And yeah, we'll definitely have a drink or two and celebrate and maybe party, but not right away, right? My vision is going to go well. And then like maybe after a couple of days, I could really say, okay, it went well and it's still going well and things are good. So definitely looking forward to it.
Okay. Yeah. I guess there's no fast finality for the merge.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, it's kind of a long game too. It's like, it has a lot of things it wants to solve that you can't even really quantify for some time. So, yeah.
All right. Well, good work so far. We look forward to seeing how it all plays out. Thanks so much for coming on Unchained.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Don't forget, next up is the weekly news recap. Stick around for This Week in Crypto after this short break. To swap crypto, a user has to choose among hundreds of DEXs on multiple networks, all offering different rates and fees. Do you want to avoid that hassle? Swap on 1inch, a top DEX aggregator built to get you better rates than any single DEX. Enjoy unlimited liquidity across multiple networks and top-level security. Get 1inch on your phone now or swap on 1inch.io.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's news recap. Coinbase funds lawsuit against Treasury over Tornado Cash sanctions. As mentioned earlier in the episode, on Thursday, six Tornado Cash users, including Preston Van Loon, filed a lawsuit against the Treasury Department. Their legal fees will be covered by Coinbase. Coinbase's chief legal officer, Paul Gruhl, told CNBC he is worried about the legal precedents that these sanctions are setting. He said, if this code can be designated without any limits imposed by law, any technology, any tool or system could be fair game. Ever since the sanctions, there's been uncertainty around what U.S.-based institutions will do after the merge, such as whether they would validate or attest to blocks with transactions involving sanctioned addresses. However, this week, Gruhl said that Coinbase believes validators are not compelled to censor transactions. The merge sparked some DeFi disruptions and new business opportunities. Ahead of the merge, DeFi protocol Aave decided to temporarily halt loans of Ether. The decision was made by the Aave community, which was worried that people would increasingly borrow ETH in order to receive any coins from a potential post-merge proof-of-work version of Ethereum. The excessive borrowing could cause a liquidity crisis. Decentralized applications are not the only ones moving fast before the merge. This week, Binance US enabled high-yield ETH staking, offering a 6% APY for US users. In addition, Swiss crypto bank SEPA also announced its own Ethereum staking services on Wednesday for institutional investors. Ethereum miners are reallocating resources. With the merge, the Ethereum mainnet will transition from a proof-of-work to a proof-of-stake consensus algorithm. But that doesn't mean that Ether miners are going to have to waste all their computing power. For instance, crypto miner Hive Blockchain is exploring other mining alternatives. The company, which is reportedly mining $350,000 worth of Bitcoin and ETH a day, is testing other proof-of-work chains, but hasn't confirmed which ones specifically. However, Hut 8 Mining Group decided to take a different path, as it will desist from mining and reallocate its resources to machine learning and artificial intelligence. This week, Ethereum Classic's hash rate hit an all-time high, which indicates that miners may be shifting their computing power there. In addition, London-based firm ETC Group announced that it would support a proof-of-work version of Ethereum if one exists post-merge. Is the White House against proof of work? The White House released a report called Climate and Energy Implications of Crypto Assets in the United States, in which it claims that crypto assets could hinder broader efforts to achieve net zero carbon pollution consistent with U.S. climate commitments and goals. The report said some crypto asset technologies currently require a considerable amount of electricity for asset generation, ownership, and exchange. Electricity usage from digital assets is contributing to greenhouse gas emissions, additional pollution, noise, and other local impacts, depending on markets, policies, and local electricity sources. It urged federal agencies, such as the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Energy, among others, to minimize the environmental impacts of crypto assets, ensure energy reliability, obtain data to monitor the impacts, advance energy efficiency standards, and other measures. The crypto market cap drops below $1 trillion, and Vitalik has concerns about BTC. On Wednesday, Bitcoin fell below the $19,000 mark, dragging the crypto market cap down to less than $1 trillion once again. BTC and ETH hit a weekly low of $18,644 and $1,500 respectively, according to CoinMarketCap. The ETH-BTC ratio, which tracks the performance of Ether against Bitcoin, reached a yearly high this week, showing that investors are more confident in Ethereum. In an interview with economics writer Noah Smith, Ethereum's founder Vitalik Buterin said he has two concerns for BTC. First, he claimed that Bitcoin can't rely solely on transaction fees to secure the network. This will happen when the block rewards are phased out, sometime around the year 2140. He said Bitcoin is just not succeeding at getting the level of fee revenue required to secure what could be a multi-trillion dollar system. Bitcoin fees are about $300,000 per day and haven't really grown that much over the last 5 years. Second, he said that proof of stake is more efficient than proof of work, and he is worried that the Bitcoin community doesn't want to make that transition. Was Celsius a Ponzi scheme? According to a filing from the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation, crypto lender Celsius used new investor funds to repay old investors, a technique most commonly known as a Ponzi scheme. Celsius is currently going through bankruptcy proceedings, and the report from the Vermont Department analyzed how the company was managed. The filing said, during the course of the multi-state investigation, it has become clear that Celsius, through its CEO, Alex Mashinsky, and otherwise, made false and misleading claims to investors about, inter alia, the company's financial health and its compliance with securities laws, both of which likely induced retail investors to invest in Celsius or to leave their investments in Celsius despite concerns about the volatility of the cryptocurrency market. Furthermore, Celsius is being accused of manipulating the price of its token, CEL, to boost its balance sheet. Some Celsius borrowers are asking the bankruptcy court to appoint an independent examiner to look into Celsius's financials. However, they don't want one employed by the U.S. Trustee Office, as they are concerned about the delay it would cause in the resolution of the case. Celsius is expecting a cash injection of $70 million from loan repayments, according to Kirkland & Ellis, the law firm in charge of the company's restructuring. These funds will help Celsius meet its operational expenses for 2022. Speaking of troubled crypto companies, Pullin Wallet, the wallet service of one of the world's biggest Bitcoin mining pools, suspended withdrawals amidst a liquidity crisis. Kevin Pan, the firm's CEO and founder, assured users that the assets were safe. Crypto broker Voyager Digital will hold an asset auction on September 13th as part of its bankruptcy proceedings. The results of the auction will be approved at a hearing to be held on September 29th. Coinbase makes a controversial proposal on MakerDAO. Coinbase, the largest cryptocurrency exchange in the U.S., offered MakerDAO a business proposal to access $24 million in yearly revenue. The company posted a governance proposal on the MakerDAO forum to have the protocol deposit $1.6 billion worth of USDC in Coinbase Prime, the exchange's institutional platform, in return for a 1.5% annual yield, which would be about $24 million. The drama around this proposal is that it would push Maker further towards the centralization side of the spectrum, something that its own founder has been trying to fight. The community is divided on Coinbase's proposal, with some arguing that it would boost Maker's revenue, while others saying that DAI and Maker will end up in the hands of Coinbase. Binance removes USDC, but Circle is not worried. Binance, the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange, announced it will remove USDC and some other stablecoins as tradable assets from its platform. On September 29th, the platform will automatically convert any USDC, USDP, and TUSD tokens into its own stablecoin, BUSD, at a 1-to-1 ratio to enhance liquidity and capital efficiency for users. Evgeny Gavoy, founder and CEO of Wintermute, tweeted, "Removing most stablecoin pairs is a good thing. It's not USDC delisting. It's another big step towards Tether losing ground to US native stablecoins." Jeremy Allaire, the CEO of Circle, the issuer of USDC, doesn't seem worried. He said, "Given how limited BUSD usage is outside of Binance, this will likely benefit USDC as the preferred cross-CEX and DEX stablecoin rail, unless Binance can convince all their competitors to get behind BUSD. Unlikely. The Fed wants stablecoin regulation, but it may have to wait." Speaking of stablecoins, three different Federal Reserve officials, Federal Reserve Board Chair Jerome Powell, Fed Vice Chair for Supervision Michael Barr, and Fed Vice Chair Lael Brainard, pushed for stablecoin regulation at three separate conferences this week. As Powell said at a Cato Institute conference, "I think you need regulation. If people are going to think something is money, it needs to have the qualities of money. I don't think you want to take money and make it into just another consumer product." However, CoinDesk regulation and policy reporter Nicholas Day wrote in a column that although it had been expected that stablecoin regulation might be adopted this year, that's currently looking unlikely. A number of issues, such as the role of state regulators and the possibility of a digital dollar, among other items, remain to be ironed out. Time for fun bits. A violin soundtrack for the rainbow model. Over the past few years, there's been plenty of analysts trying to come up with models to predict the price of BTC. But there's one that's become a meme on Twitter. Eric Wall's rainbow chart, a mock model for the Bitcoin price. It is basically a rainbow, indicating when BTC is cheap to buy or, in the model's words, basically a fire sale. Even though it is a made-up model, the price of Bitcoin has never fallen below the lowest band on the rainbow. Wall, a crypto analyst and writer, posted a hilarious video on Twitter showing how closely the rainbow model was to failing against a clip from the movie Titanic. In this scene, the boat is sinking and the violinists play their last song. Because it looked like the model was just about to fail, Wall superimposed the rainbow chart on top, a sort of anticipatory elegy. Hours before the daily BTC candle closed, he tweeted, "Summoning a BTC USD daily close that will save the rainbow." Moments later, BTC rebounded and the model didn't break. Despite that, Wall's Twitter bio reads, "You can't predict the price of Bitcoin with a rainbow, you idiot." Thanks so much for joining us today. To learn more about Preston and the Merge, check out the show notes for this episode. Get the Unchained Daily newsletter in your email and inbox every morning. Go to unchainedpodcast.com to sign up. Unchained is produced by me, Laura Shin, with help from Anthony Yoon, Matt Pilchard, Juan Aranovich, Pam Majumdar, Shashank, CLK Transcription. Thanks for listening.